Welcome to DJ Grandpa's Crib, the podcast of Kickstarter, the crowdfunding website. Each week I interview real people with honest dreams. Today is Monday, October 14th, 2013. During this week in history in 1951, the first episode of I Love Lucy aired on CBS. It quickly became the most popular American television show of the 1950s. Who doesn't love Lucy? And without the show's star, Lucille Ball, there wouldn't be Star Trek. And how could I live without that?
Hi, I'm Carly, founder of Oobly.
And we're on a quest to make a toy that matters. Oobly is a magical stuffed animal that talks and listens to kids.
Hi, I'm an Oobly. Nice to meet you, Luke.
Hello.
We created Oobly because the toy industry is broken. They don't care about your kid. It's more about when can they sell you the next toy, not does your child still love the current one.
You got the Carly, you got the Oobly, so that's two good pitches right there. Do you have a name for your company?
Actually, the company name is Oobly Inc.
Okay, now I watched your video. I said that to everybody. I watched your video several times, and I guess that never makes you an expert if you say you watched it several times. But it was like a perfect pitch, though. You started off, so that's cool, and you do the kind of like, it feels like you do the mom thing, and then you throw like the glasses on the Oobly, and that was like totally cool, too. And your video had all sorts of people in it. You know, you have people who look like moms, parents, dads. You had people of different shades. So, you know, that showed diversity. So that was cool. But I know you didn't call me for like this whole marketing session. I don't know. But it just felt cool. It was like a perfect pitch. So I can see why you're doing well on Kickstarter. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's pretty much all I wanted to say. So welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
What would you like to tell me about Oobly?
I'm not sure if you saw this, but it's actually our second Kickstarter project. Yeah, and we decided to come back to Kickstarter because we launched about a year and a half ago. And it was pretty incredible how supportive our Kickstarter backers were. So they actually helped us really determine what the product should be when it grew up.
Right.
And we've been working really hard at it, but we've made an incredible amount of changes. So we felt like before we do a major push to the rest of the world, we really wanted to get their help on ironing out the second product. And so far, I have to say that our latest Kickstarter project is even more amazing than our last one. I can't tell you how many messages I've been getting per day from all our backers, but right. It's pretty incredible.
So Oobly is old?
So when Oobly first launched on Kickstarter, right. It was really about the technology. It was about, you know, putting a phone inside of a toy. We did want to change toys. But now that we've had, you know, our community out there, we've really reworked the entire app experience.
Right.
And part of our Kickstarter project is funding new languages, because that was the number one request we got from parents. So we really had to re-engineer the entire toy to support five new languages. It was an incredible amount of work. And now we're kind of on the later phase of finding voice actresses and translating all the content.
Why did you come up with the Oobly anyway?
My husband and I are both founders of Oobly, and we were making mobile apps on contract, and right. A few of them were for kids. And we thought, you know, hey, this is a really amazing platform. But what we were starting to see was kids were shifting away from toys for these mobile apps, but it was a really short-term experience. They download an app, play with it for a little while, and then move on to the next one. And we thought, hey, this is kind of sad because these kids are getting really attached to this piece of glass and metal. And there is some value in traditional toys. It's just that traditional toys haven't really caught up to the technology and made that experience enriching. So we thought, well, let's use the power of a mobile device to power this little guy. And we'll have it be wholesome and this great experience using your kids' imaginations like we did as kids. But we'll use the technology to enhance that experience. We really stuck to that. And I think that we've come up with something that's pretty new.
You know, for those people who don't have Kickstarter on their desktop open to your page right now, I don't think we've told what the Oobly is.
So Oobly is a stuffed animal that's educational and talks and listens to kids. And it's powered by mobile devices. You can work with an old iPhone or iPad mini or Android device, you name it. It's actually all voice interactive. And the speech recognition is all local on the phone. So well, the typical use case that we see is mom and dad hands down their old iPhone or Android device, and that becomes a kid's phone and they'll pair it with Oobly. And now they have this new talking buddy. And the really neat part about it is we actually, for free with the app, we give a novel's worth of content that we've recorded with our voice actors. So there's a ton of stuff. So the whole design is to get kids to continue to play and to have this great friend that's educational. And the neat part is that probably our most popular activities are choose your own adventure. So kids can actually pick paths in their adventure. So there's a rainforest game where Oobly says, oh, we just came to this big tree and the tree has a button on it. Should we press it? And the kid gets to choose. And based on the decisions they make, they can engage in different parts of the story with Oobly. It's pretty neat.
Now, who thought of the name, actually, Oobly? Who's the genius for the name?
Well, I will be honest. When we started Oobly, we were a husband-wife team.
Was his name George first?
No. We actually had a lot of different working names, but we didn't have a lot of money to, you know, buy a fancy domain name. So we went and looked at available domain names that sounded like kids' toys. Yeah. And then we had about 20 names, and we had kids and families help us pick the right one. And we really liked Oobly because it wasn't an English word. So it didn't necessarily mean anything to us. And then also, we all felt like it would be great internationally.
Oh, it's not one of those Volkswagen things again. You know, like in one country, Volkswagen is cool. In another country, it's like an eyesore or something, the name.
Exactly. Yeah, we wanted it to be universal.
Okay. All right. Just checking. I didn't want you guys to go down that path. Why aren't they selling in Latin America? You know.
We've not run into any countries yet where the Oobly name means anything bad. Or
in Latin America, Oobly means hole in the wall.
No, not quite yet. Maybe there's one language we haven't figured out yet.
Okay, well, that's cool. That sounds like a pretty cool story, husband and wife. Are you guys like the founders? Because I saw you have like this whole development team around the desk or something. Spying on kids, though.
I saw that. Would you get parents' permission to do that?
Do you think of the Oobly? Well, no, I guess I can't even ask you because you'd have to say, no, I don't think of the Oobly as the television, just the glorified, but...
Well, televisions can't move, for one. And that actually is some concern. Like, before people actually get to experience a toy, a lot of parents will say, I'm trying to avoid screen time with my kid. I don't want to really have them engage more. And I've seen parents have that transformation where they go in thinking that, and then they see the way how Oobly works because it's primarily voice interactive.
Right.
It gets kids looking around the room. Like one of the Oobly's games that he plays, it says, you know, okay, I want you to look around the room right now and remember everything. And now time to close your eyes. And then the kid has to recite the things in the room, you know, like how many windows are there? What color are the walls? You know, some fun little memory games. And instead of them staring at that screen, they're popping their heads up and they're looking around and they're imagining this amazing world and going on adventures. So yes, it has that appeal initially and the kids are drawn to it because it has that screen. But the real magic is that they move away from the screen and they start looking around them. And that's been our goal from the very beginning.
Okay.
So we're being sneaky about it with kids.
That's what I mean. You guys are trying to outsmart me at every stage of the game. And, you know, I don't really like that, but, you know, I have to respect that. I got another question. I like to be contrarian.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah. You guys show this video and, the Oobly doesn't move or jump up and down or anything like that. Because then, you know, that'd be an obvious one. That can't be real. But you didn't do that. So, okay. Yeah. But the Oobly, its face seems to move, like eyes wink or something, mouth or something. Is that animation like TV magic, or does the Oobly actually do this?
So we do have ambient animations. So when he's, you know, just waiting for a response, he blinks and looks around. And then what we look at is the audio output when he's talking, and that's when we show his mouth moving. So it syncs up. Right. But there's all kinds of other animations to express emotion. And that's one big thing that we're doing with this next Kickstarter launch is adding a lot more emotional range so kids can have an impact on Oobly's emotions.
So it's not TV magic. I want to get
it's
this straight.
It's not TV magic.
All right.
We actually have an app in the App Store and it currently has animations in it. But the new version that we're launching is going to have a whole lot more. So people can check it out.
I hope that I have been thoroughly mean to you so that...
Not quite. You're going to have to work on that.
No. I don't like it when people say that. I'm DJ Grandpa. I'm supposed to be mean to people. So hopefully I've been thoroughly mean to you and I've gotten everybody's questions out. And if you have any other questions for Carly, please go to Kickstarter.com and type in Oobly, and that's U-B-O-O-L-Y. And if it means something terrible in your language, please let her know that first. That's what I want to know first. Yeah. And if you can't find it there, you get lost. The print on the page is too small, even though it's a beautifully designed page. Go to djgrandpa.com and we'll provide links for Carly and her company and, of course, for Oobly. Carly, thanks very much, and I hope that you and your team have a great deal of success on Kickstarter.
Thank you so much, DJ Grandpa.
Hi, I'm Sebastian, inventor of the Sevo. I'm a mechanical engineer by trade, but my real passion is technology and music festivals.
Hi, I'm Eric, an entrepreneur, avid festival goer, and a total geek when it comes to colors and lighting.
Hello.
How's it going, man?
It's going pretty good. How's it going, dude?
It's good to meet you.
Now, I'm really excited about this product, even though it's just a glow light, but it's still cool, the Sevo, man. And I want to welcome you, man, to the show, Eric. And I know you have a partner. You talk about him a lot in the video. What does he do?
My partner's name is Sebastian, which is where the name Sevo came from, actually. It's a name that his family kind of would call him, and we thought it was perfectly appropriate to name this light wristband after him. And after, you know, he's the first one that put this thing together. We took a class together at TXRX Labs here in Houston. It's a hackerspace, and we learned Arduino, and man, he just went home and built it just from this one little course. So he's an engineer, lives in San Francisco. Unfortunately, he's not here in Houston to kind of share the excitement and what's happening here locally, but he's out there in San Francisco pushing the bracelet, and it's been a great, great relationship working with him on this.
Well, just tell him that DJ Grandpa said hello, man. I appreciate it.
I will for sure. I'll make sure he tunes in and listens to it.
The Sevo is a rechargeable and programmable LED wristband that comes pre-programmed with various colorful animated light patterns. To use the Sevo, simply strap it to your wrist and push the button mounted on the surface to turn it on. Each subsequent press of the button will change the color pattern as you
definitely this is not my day job, but it's my hobby. It's what I love lights, and I love music, and this is my way in. At the ripe age of 32, I feel like I'm probably a little too old to be carrying around a little bracelet with lights on it. I mean, sometimes it's kind of embarrassing, but I'll have a couple beers and I'll be fine. But yeah, it definitely takes a little bit of coercing for me to walk into a room full of adults and say, hey, look what I've got.
Right.
I have a ceramic tile business that I started about 10 years ago. I guess about a year and a half ago, it was to the point where it was successful. I mean, it took me like 9 years to even realize that it was successful, but it just grew so slow, and it was such a nightmare. But, you know, I finally had a little bit of extra money in the bank, and I was going to all the music festivals. I mean, I love electronic music. I go to Coachella every year. I go to all these festivals, and a friend of mine, you know, invented this little bracelet that lit up real bright, and I remember one time I went to the restroom and I was like, man, in 5 minutes, just raise your hand. And in a crowd of like 30,000 people, not even joking, in the very middle of the crowd, I could spot it instantly. I knew exactly how to get back. And at that moment, I was like, we need to develop this into a product, you know, because it stood out. It was like nothing else that was on the market.
Right.
I did not expect at that point to sink about $25,000 into developing an LED bracelet. But the opportunities, I think, kept getting bigger and the costs kept going up. But I was thankfully in a position where I wasn't, you know, I wasn't living paycheck to paycheck for the first time in my entire life. And I had saved up a little bit of money. So that's where the impetus came to develop it. And now I'm really excited about it. And, you know, it's really rewarding because people are buying this thing without ever having held it before. And it looks cool on video and it looks cool on pictures like the Kickstarter campaign. I'm pretty proud of it. Then you actually have it in your hand and it's a completely different object. It just has this like fire to it.
I see this being fun for a lot of people, man. And I guess that's why I sent you the request, because I was like, you know, it's not rocket science. It's none of that. But it's just if there's a party atmosphere, if there's a festival atmosphere, if there's, like you said, a whole parking lot full of people, and you guys got to stay connected somehow.
Right. Yeah.
You know, if you just raise your hand, where are you at? your partner, and you can see each other. So that's kind of cool, man.
We went to a music festival last year in Atlanta, and we made 10 of them. Right. They take like 6 hours to make each, you know, and they cost like $50 in components, you know, like the handmade ones, the original ones. So there's 10 of us, you know, running around this festival with these things on. And a lot of the time we were together, a lot of the time we weren't. And it was really easy from anywhere in the festival. You could spot the group, you know, but it was a really rewarding thing. I'd be in the back of this long line of people kind of traveling around the festival. And just in front of me, I've got these 10
right.
glowing objects that, I mean, you could just see people being like, what the hell is going on with these people? You know, and we were all older. You know, right. it was kind of cool. We're looking around a music festival where, you know, I had my days in college. I had my raver days, you know, I mean, and I would do it all over again. It was an amazing part of my life. But I mean, you know, I grew out of it. And unfortunately, I set that aside. Unfortunately, the music got wrapped into that. And I kind of like took electronic music out of my life just to kind of, you know, move on from that. But at the age of 30, I kind of got back into it. And I realized that, it doesn't have to be about all the negative stuff. You know, there's a lot of really positive things that come out of electronic music. And right. we look around and we're in a group of architects and engineers and surgeons. And yeah, we're all way older than anybody else at these festivals, but we're having just as good of a time, if not better. And on top of that, we've got these, you know, these little glow things in our arms. It was really a sight to see, man. It was pretty interesting.
But what about the kid lights? You know, I'm calling them kiddie lights, but were they a conversation piece? Because I see younger people possibly gravitating to this. So were there people who are like, dude, what's that?
I've had people offer me insane amounts of money at these things for what's on my wrist at the time. And I tell them, I'm like, look, this is my only one. We made it. But, you know, girls love it.
Right.
But even the dudes, man, they really dig it too. They may not show it right off the bat because it's a glow toy. Because
they're dudes.
They dig it.
You heard it from Eric, man. If you want to be the brightest person in the room, the loudest person in the room, if you want to be spotted in that parking lot when you may have a few friends or something or children or something, and you want them all to be found without putting on those nuisance child leashes or something, use the Sebo. And they'll have fun at the same time, and it'll be a conversation piece. So go to Kickstarter.com and type in Sebo. That's S-E-B-B-O, if I spelled it correctly. And if not, Eric will countermand me with the right words.
That's right, man.
Because we are a team. And if you can't find it, well, he already has a partner, but we're a team for right now. And if you can't find it there, go to djgrandpa.com and we'll post links. Thanks for coming on the show, dude.
Thank you very much, man.
Hi, I'm Jeff from Greenbrier Games, and we're back with a new game called Ninja Dice.
I'm Rocco Privatera, the game's designer. Ninja Dice offers a unique playing experience for gamers of all types while pushing the push your luck game.
Who has the bigger ego? Who goes first? Is it Jeff or Rocco?
I probably have the bigger ego, but Jeff should go first.
Yeah, Rocco's got the bigger ego.
Does that mean that he's also a nicer guy since he says you should go first? I'm trying to, you know, psychoanalyze you guys.
I just respect where the money's coming from. That's all.
How has the Kickstarter community been treating you guys?
Our company has had two successful Kickstarters, so we've been able to amass a nice following of people on Kickstarter who support us and support the, you know, small gaming company that we are.
Okay, Rocco, man. Game designer, man. Extraordinaire, man. You need to tell me about this game, man. You're a little silent.
Ninja Dice, it's a dice-based, ninja-themed, push-your-luck-style game where you are, you know, you're trying to steal treasure from a house that you're breaking into while all the other players in the game are making it difficult for you. You're unlocking locks, you're fighting off guards, you're sneaking past the residents who live there or some combination of the above. You're under a time pressure because each time that you re-roll dice to try to do all those things, the other players are rolling dice to use up your time or to take money from you or take money from each other. It's simple enough that a casual game player can enjoy it, but it's got enough meat on it that the hardcore game players, you know, would still also find it fun. And it's got a couple of unique gameplay systems in it that really haven't been seen before.
What makes you two tick, man? Because this podcast isn't always about the game. It's about the individuals involved, the people who are making it happen. So, like, Jeff, have you ever been in a room and punched Rocco like he did something?
No, actually, I haven't.
Well, have you wanted to? I mean, is he that type of guy? He gets to you?
No, actually, I find that our discussions regarding, you know, game design and stuff like that are very engaging, and it's very easy to bounce even the wildest ideas off of him, and he really does take them into consideration. I haven't gotten to the point where I wanted to just give you a punch in the face, Rocco. I don't know if you have felt that way about me. Probably, because I'm a pretty tough guy sometimes.
No, for the most part, everything's been pretty good. I heard a lot of horror stories about working with publishers, and so far, it's been boringly good.
Boringly good.
How many people can play this game, basically?
Generally speaking, it's 2 to 5 players. Definitely, when you have more players, it has a more of a party, crazy sort of atmosphere going, but it still scales really well, so it's not like a 5-player game ends up being really long.
Rocco, are you this may be insulting to you, but are you a one-hit wonder? Like, is this all you have?
I certainly hope not. I mean, I got a pile of game designs, some of which I put aside to work on Ninja Dice, and some of which I still am working on.
Let me ask this question. What do you guys honestly think about Kickstarter then? Because sometimes I talk to people who aren't familiar with Kickstarter, and sometimes that's a lot of people, but they're dubious. They're always like disbelief. Like, yeah, I can't believe that's real. It doesn't sound real. It can't be possible. You know, yada, yada, yada. So what do you guys think about Kickstarter?
I think without Kickstarter, none of these games that I've made would have even been possible. I mean, if you think about it, to make an average board game that's, you know, decent size with a board and cards and player pieces and stuff, I mean, that takes a significant investment. You know, you're talking $30,000 to make this game. And before, you as a designer would have to go to a publisher who's already successful, who's already found, who knows, investors and 5 years into the company, has employees, you know, knows all the manufacturer's contacts, etc., and pitch your game to them. But now, I mean, you can go to Kickstarter to sort of put your game out on the market before it's even produced. And it takes some of that risk of investment away, because you are showing your game to the world and saying, look, this is what my game is currently, and we want to make it. Or, you know, we want to make it even better by raising X more dollars. That's the great thing about Kickstarter.
Would either of you, before we close, would you like to thank your backers?
Yes. Thank you very much for all the people from both, you know, the very beginning at Zpocalypse to all the way to now, our new backers and Ninja Dice for supporting us. I mean, we're a small gaming company. I know that, Rocco, you've got a day job. I've got a day job. Almost all of my people have a day job. I mean, we're not doing this full time, although that will be our dream one day. But gaming is a passion for me, and designing games and publishing games is, I feel like it's a calling. And I'm excited at the fact that I'm able to work with Rocco to help his dream come true now that I've seen, you know, Zpocalypse in the marketplace.
For anyone out there, check out Ninja Dice by Greenbrier Games. They're on Kickstarter, and they seem to be getting off to a pretty good run, man. And, you know, of course, I like Ninja. Everybody, Ninjas, everybody does. And everybody always likes games with dice in it. So that sounds pretty cool, too. But if you have any problem finding these guys, because sometimes they're like more than 300 games on Kickstarter at one time. So if you can't find them, just go to djgrandpa.com and type. No, you don't have to type in anything, but just go to djgrandpa.com and we'll provide links for these two gentlemen and their games. Rocco and Jeff, Jeff and Rocco, I don't know which one gets proper attribution first, but I thank you guys for coming on the show and giving me a chance to speak with you.
Well, thanks for having us.
Stay in Texas for miles away.
Late 1980s, early 1990s Athens was an amazingly fertile environment for a musician just starting out. I'd just graduated from the University of Montana with a degree in philosophy, and I'd enrolled at UGA for graduate school. But mainly it was an excuse to avoid a real job, so I could spend my nights playing music, often until the sun came up.
Hello, Aaron?
Yeah.
DJ Grandpa here.
Nice to meet you. So how did you hear about this record?
You know, the cover looked interesting, and I listened to the video, and You have this long, twisty story of in and out of time, masters getting lost, and I like the music, so I kind of wanted to be involved.
Oh, cool. I appreciate it.
Why don't you tell me your version of the story? What happened, man?
I didn't start making music until I was probably 19, 20.
Right.
And by the time I got to Georgia, I was, in my late 20s, and that's when I started writing songs. And these guys I was living with said, man, you should record some of this stuff. And, so I got some old Athens musicians to play on it. I mostly played everything myself, and the place I recorded it at, the recording studio, the woman, she also had a dog grooming business, and she needed carpentry work done, and I was a carpenter, so I did carpentry work for her, and then she would give me studio time. So it took like a year of maybe an hour or two every Sunday.
That's how you ransomed the masters from her and stuff, gotcha.
Yeah, she had this old school machine with, I think it was 2-inch tape, so it sounded really good. All of your good times and good friends won't keep you from dying. Look your eye, may you give up the ghost with a smile. 'Cause all of your good times and good friends won't keep you from dying. I recorded this disc and people loved it. Then I started playing in a regular band and we toured all over and put out a few other CDs under different names and whatever. But that one was pretty magical and always had a great sound. But I sold out of it. And then probably, 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, she called me up, the woman who owned the recording studio, and said, hey, I'm getting rid of all this analog stuff and going digital, and I'm getting rid of these tapes. Do you want them? And by this time, I was back in Montana, so I was like, what am I ever going to do with them? And I said, no, just do whatever you want. And I assumed she threw them out. So, all I have left is a CD, and a friend of mine possibly has that tape of it, and I'm going to remaster it and burn it to LP, which I kind of always wanted to put it on LP.
Now, I never want to get the genre wrong, so what type of music do you classify it as?
I never really knew how to describe it except kind of like old-time country. A lot of them, people call it a kind of road music, and that I think I say in my little piece in there that I had a little piece of land in Montana that I was building a cabin on way up in the mountains, and I'd spend my summers up there, building this log cabin, and then I'd go back to Athens to go to school. And I wrote all of those songs while I was driving. So there are a lot about traveling, different women I was involved with, and the usual kind of country music stuff. But yeah, I'd write on napkins and whatever while I was driving.
Right.
Then I'd get to a camp spot or whatever, build a fire, and kind of sit around with a guitar. And that's pretty much how they all came together. I was born El Cinco de Mayo.
Taking up in school? What university? What were you taking up?
That was the University of Georgia, and I was studying literature.
Oh, okay. Man, a writer in so many ways.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, okay, after you done this out, what is that, like 20 years ago or so?
See, I think it came out in 1996. So that's,
About 18 years.
Yeah.
Well, how have things turned out?
My life's pretty different now. I still play music. I mostly play fiddle now and for square dances and stuff like that. I don't have a band anymore. I seldom play those songs except when I go back to Georgia and, hang out with the people I used to play with.
And you're on Kickstarter now. What's it going to mean to you to finally have it pressed into vinyl? What's that going to mean to you?
I grew up listening to vinyl, so I've always kind of missed the sound of records. And my wife and I just got a turntable a few months ago, and, I got out all my old vinyl, and I've been listening to music more than I have in years. And the idea of vinyl just is really appealing to me. And then this friend of mine, who's a record collector, said, vinyl's coming back. And he's actually the guy who talked me into doing this.
Mm-hmm. He said there's people who collect new artists on vinyl because it's new, even though it's old, and they like the sound of it. And he said, I bet if you do a Kickstarter thing, you'll find enough people to be intrigued by it that they'll buy it. And then I hooked up with this other guy who's a letterpress artist, you know, the old school printing press with the actual mechanical metal press, and he's going to make the dust jacket. So it's definitely a retro kind of approach.
When you listen to these songs right now and you're going through this whole Kickstarter process, what do those songs mean to you? What memories do they bring back?
That's one of the best parts about the whole thing is listening to this music again. You know, I really haven't listened to the recordings. You know, I've played these songs still, but, you know, when I hear the CD, it definitely takes me back to that time, and it has a real kind of organic sound. You know, it's just really magical coming together of people and a time, and I'm really glad I got it recorded.
Yeah.
You write a song and you can always play it, but when you capture it on tape, it's like that performance, you know, just you'll never have it again. And so it's been great to listen to it. And I think they do mean a lot to me still. I mean, it's like you said, it's not the same as it was when you were first going through it, but time gives you a great perspective on things.
You're still a poet, man. You're still a poet.
Thanks.
For anyone out there, I believe that Aaron is right. I think that time does give you perspective. It definitely does for me. I remember a lot of things, and man, sometimes cool and sometimes not. But if you're interested in the music that we're playing, the music that's in the background, incredible music by Aaron, go to Kickstarter.com and type in Sinners. That's how I found it, actually. Sinners. S-I-N-N-E-R-S. And what's the rest, Aaron?
Sinners on Vinyl LP.
And if you can't find it there, always go to djgrandpa.com and we'll post links for Aaron and this incredible album. Thanks for coming on the show.
It was great to talk to you. I really appreciate it.
Is up, everybody. Thank you so much for clicking through and checking out my project. I'm Omar Morales, and I'm here to tell you about my Kickstarter graphic novel project. It's called Crusader, Agent of the Vatican. Here you can have a look-see.
So yeah, what should I call you for the record? Should it be Omar Morales? What should it be?
You know, my best friends, they call me O-Dog. O-D-O-double-G. So we can roll like that, DJ Grandpa.
Let's see. O-Dog. I'm calling him O-Dog. Well, if he has to call me DJ Grandpa, the least I can call you is O-Dog. How do I pronounce your comic? Because I wasn't sure how to.
There's a whole story behind that, but you pronounce it Crusader, Agent of the Vatican. And the Z is indicative of a couple of things. The main character's name is Antonio de la Cruz with a Z.
Right.
That's how cross is spelled in Spanish. It's Cruz with a Z, and that's his last name. But his lineage goes all the way back to the Crusades in the days of the Knights Templar. So it's kind of a bit of a play on words.
All right. Tell us about the story, man. Crusader.
Yeah.
Graphic novel with cover by the legendary Paul Gullacy.
It's about one man's struggle, right? That's really what it boils down to, is a man who's searching for a higher calling, a higher meaning in life. And he's struggling with the station in life. You know, he, as far as he knew, was an orphan, and he grew up to become a priest. And then one day the Vatican comes down and tells him, you're not a priest anymore, buddy. They take away his collar, and they say, you're going to spend the next few years training to be a super commando. You know, you're going to be undercover, taking orders directly from the Pope, and you're going to be, you know, doing some black ops missions for us. And his world is just rocked. He's like, what are you talking about? You know, like, that's not me. I'm a priest. You know, that's all I ever wanted to be. Right. And they break it down to him and said, you know what? Your dad was the Crusader. Your grandpa was the Crusader. Your great-grandpa was the Crusader, all the way back to the Knights Templar. And he just can't fathom this. And so they show him the ancient scrolls and take him through the history. And they're like, you're next in line. Your time is up. And so he loves his church and he decides, okay, I'm going to do this kind of against what feels right. I'm going to do this because the Pope is counting on me. And so he takes on his duty and grinds it out. And then fast forward 20 years later, he's feeling like the time is is right for him to move on. And he's pressing the Pope and the church to get his successor ready. There's conflict and there's struggle there with his boss, right? Everybody has that. And right. His boss happens to be the Pope. So there's conflict there. And he still does his duty. You know, that old saying, real heroes put dinner on the table every night, you know, and that's kind of his contribution.
I never heard that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Dad say that all the time. You know?
Okay. I believe you.
Real heroes put food on the table every night. You know, they grind it out. They do their job and they provide for their family. And that's kind of his contribution, right? He's grinding it out and doing his duty. It's an epic story, man. I don't want to give away too much, but essentially the time comes where all hell's breaking loose and some radical terrorists have stormed the Vatican. He's away from the Vatican at the time and he has to come in and save the day. And he does that with some people that are very, very close to him that he has brought with him to save the day. And it wasn't his intention to bring these people into the battle, but in they go. And it ends in a way that it's over, and yet it can continue on and on and on and sideways and backwards and forwards. I mean, what I've done is...
You're not telling too much, are you? Because the fight of good versus evil will always continue.
Oh, yes.
I mean, you're not absolutely giving away too much, though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I like surprises now.
There's some shocking moments in there for sure.
I know. Because so far, you've told me a very compelling story. And I'm already sold on your story. Because, I mean, you got the Vatican. You got these cloaked cats. You got spears. Yeah. You got knives. You got aliens, I think.
You got
vibrant graphics. I mean, what else could you ask for in a story?
Well, let me tell you about his powers, because he doesn't really have powers. His powers come from the artifacts that he uses as weapons. Okay, the spear he uses is called the Spear of Christ,
right.
The Lance of Legend. It's got all kinds of names, and it's supposed to come from the very soldier that pierced Jesus' side when he was up on the cross and kind of let all the blood out of his body. And that spear has remained in the human consciousness and lore for real. Like, there is a spearhead in Germany that people think is the real deal. A lot of people say it's not. A lot of people say we have the real one here in Armenia. There's some people in Spain to say they have the real one. Who knows which one is the real one, but it has captured the imagination of people. And so in my book, the spear is super powered. He doesn't have powers, but when he has the spear with him, he's like almost invincible. I mean, he can just do so many things with that spear. He also uses the Shroud of Turin, which is the burial cloth of Christ. He's an exorcist, so he has that power.
Hold up. I'm only thinking the movie The Exorcist. I don't know what an exorcist is except for this whole Damien exorcist and all that.
Yeah, so there are maybe a couple dozen. I could be wrong, but there's a very small handful of priests in the world that are trained exorcists.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That can exorcise demons from I understand now. Okay.
Yeah, there's a select group that get trained in the rites of exorcism, and they have the ability to perform exorcism and cast out demons, and he can do that. But sometimes he runs into some demons that are pretty damn powerful, and so he uses all the tricks of the trade and the tools in his bag to help fight the demons out, you know. And that includes, like I said, the Shroud of Turin.
Right.
He's got the Holy Grail. Holy water, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But when he uses it, it stings your eyes if you're evil. See, the things he uses are super powered and supernatural,
right.
Whereas he's just an ordinary man.
You were really funny in the video, man, because you were like, it's the stereotype that I'm developing right now that I'm saying that I'm saying, you know, I'm like, the church, they were the first crowdfunders on the planet. They knew how to pass the plate before anybody. You know?
Oh, yeah, man. Coffee and donuts after church. Let's raise some money for the local charity. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And you were at the end of the video. You were like, I'll take any money, any denomination.
Yeah.
I don't care how small, how little.
Oh, yeah. One, two, three, five. I'll take it.
You're all these contradictions and turns.
Oh yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah. I am. I really am.
You're twisted, man. You're twisted.
I'm someone that believes that God and science don't need to be in conflict.
Right.
You know, when the Vatican came out a couple years ago and they put out a press release saying that if aliens exist, we should embrace them as our brothers and sisters, I was like, yeah, I'm down with that, man. That's awesome. Because a lot of religions aren't going to say that. But, you know, the Vatican's got some scientists up in there looking for the stars, and they may know something that we don't. Because if E.T.'s out there, they're ready to serve them Holy Communion. And I'm like, yeah, let's do that.
You know why I'm laughing at you on this one? It's not that I don't believe that aliens aren't there. I believe all that. But it's like my children always, like young people always, like, aliens, da-da-da, wishing. I was like, dude, I'm thinking that every alien movie, that aliens eat people.
In the original Alien movies, yeah, for sure, in Prometheus and all those.
Okay, what's your dream then? Okay, you got all this responsibility. You got all this responsibility, and then you're taking on the Kickstarter world also. So what's your dream?
And so if I make my money back, I'm cool, man. It would have been all worth it because the creation is really where the gold is, right? That just was what kept me going, man. It's just the story.
That's right. You said 5 years into this.
5 long years I've had to hire and fire some folks, some artists that didn't work out or that were shady. And I finally got to the right mix with the guys I have now, which are amazing. You know, Joel on art, Mike on colors, and James on letters. And then I got a graphics guy too, Etienne, and now my web guy in India, Gaurav. All these guys are I'm indebted to them forever.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm paying them, but they really put their talents into it. And so beyond that, everything else is gravy, man. I'll be living the dream if it does well enough where I can maybe come out with a sequel. And I've already got it in mind, man. It's all up here. I've got 40 pages of I call it a sidebar prequel,
right?
Which really should blow the doors off of a phrase in the Bible that is really left with zero description that can just really be explosive if you really explore. What does that really mean? What does that really mean? Let's explore that. And let's pimp it out with some graphics on over 40 pages.
You know, just hold up. I won't be able to use any of this, but I do have one funny part, though. In the same paragraph, you use Bible, Holy Bible, and pimped it out. That's too funny.
Well, you gotta admit, the artwork by Joel is pimp, man. It is sweet. It's hot stuff.
So go to Kickstarter.com and check out The Crusader. You spell it C-R-U-Z.
Yes, sir.
A-D-E-R. And if you can't find it there, go to djgrandpa.com and we'll provide links for Old Dog and all of his associates.
Cool, DJ.
Dude, thank you for coming on the show and bringing your whole team.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. It's been a pleasure.
Tom, all the way from Poland.
Yes.
Which I believe is a very cold climate, but I could be wrong. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
Am I wrong? Is it cold?
Actually, you are. Like most of the world, so don't worry.
Okay, well, I hate to be wrong, but I'm wrong every week, man. But okay, at least, is it a great country?
Oh, obviously. I totally love it here.
Okay, well, what's this Kickstarter project about? Stories in Red, a graphic novel.
This project emerged after me and two illustrator friends. Together we form a collective called Tres Leather. Thing is, we actually come from the same area, but we haven't really been in touch for years until one day we just reconnected online during an illustrative contest. Right. And it turned out that we share a very similar sensitivity and a very similar philosophy. That is, we actually believe in fairy tales. We believe that fairy tales, tales, stories, classic tales, they carry an enormous load, a very strong psychological and emotional impact. And they deserve to be retold. And that's what we wanted to do. We had this common project of illustrating three of those raw, in a way, brutal stories. We wanted to give them a visual context that's ours and, in a way, emphasize them.
Are these fairy tales, are they for kids?
Technically, they are. They've always been. They've been invented as tales for kids. However, they are all hundreds of years old.
Right.
Telling stories to kids back then was totally different to what it is now.
You said brutal. You said brutal, and stories back then were very brutal because they were trying to teach children how to stay out of harm's way and things of that nature. And the world was, you know, potentially a much more dangerous place. You know, animals, you know, there may not have been a sheriff in town, all of those sort of things. So
yes, it is certainly true. However, I would also like to point out the different aspect of this brutality. The way we see it is those tales, they just show you the world with a whole variety of possible emotions. They don't hide anything.
They don't sugarcoat anything?
Exactly, that's the word. They don't lie to kids. Furthermore, they don't lie to adults. That could be why we keep remembering them until we grow old and on. They remain fresh and they tell you things and they let you live your emotions truly in a way. Well, I'm making a big shortcut here, but
that's okay.
What I mean to say is they, in a way, allow you to see your true self and your true emotions to a story. I mean, storytelling itself is about emotions.
Well, okay, I'm from the U.S. You guys overseas, only because I'm from the U.S., so I guess I call it overseas. You would call me overseas, I guess. Yep. But I guess what I'm trying to get to is, do you believe in your country, Poland, maybe the values may be a little different than in the United States, and maybe that you guys tell your fairy tales a little differently than we do, or maybe tell more brutal ones, or maybe tell more ones that you might consider more realistic to children than people do in America?
I believe that the storytelling is different in Poland than in America. Is this what you mean? Or,
yes, sir. Yes, sir. Like, do you believe that Americans sugarcoat their stories more than maybe people in your country?
I would say partially, yes. But I don't think this applies to Americans only. Right. I think the entire Western culture is like that. It's becoming more and more pop, sort of.
Right.
I wouldn't differentiate here between Poles or whatever, the ex-Eastern Bloc whatsoever, and the rest of the world.
Right.
I would, however, point out that there are many ways of telling stories, and the one that's dominant, in my opinion right now, is the one that does sugarcoat the truth. Also, I wouldn't focus on the brutality, because sugarcoating is what I connect with, not talking about brutal things. It's rather about taking kids seriously. I mean, they are potential adults. And actually, they are just, they share the same sensitivity that we do.
I believe you, but I've never heard it put as such. They are potential adults.
I mean, yes.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Still, I think a story, if it's told properly, and if and when it does have this core in it, it will remain with you for the rest of your life. It's not only kids you're talking to here. You're talking to people.
You almost make it seem haunting in a way, the story.
True. When you look inside of the book, there is something haunting in it. Also, especially in the visuals. However, it's not only about dark fiction, say.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the completeness.
I'm looking at your video right now. The graphics, I always call them graphics, sometimes that's wrong, but to me, the graphics are incredible. They do look haunting to me, and I don't mean that in a negative way, I just mean they're unique. I remember them somehow. Even though I've never seen your work before, I remember these pictures somehow. It's incredible, and that's why I contacted you, because I was like, the graphics here are just immense. I just wanted to say thank you for these illustrations, man. I hope the words... Will there be words in this book?
Yes. Not okay. Too many, though. I mean, we certainly focus on images. Makes it universal as well.
The pictures bring back memories, man. I wanted to ask you, you spoke of classic tales, the tales mm-hmm. that you remember from your upbringing. What are a couple of stories that have maybe influenced this book? Any classic tales that do haunt you to this day that have influenced your work as far as, you know, what you do?
I do believe that almost every story by Andersen has this kind of impact. However, if I could speak for myself, that sounds strange maybe, but I'm still... moved, I think. I don't know if it's the proper word, but I'm really touched by Greek mythology.
Me too.
How it brings answers and how it explains the world to you. It's mm-hmm. very primal, I believe. And I wouldn't like to go too much into this because this is really pure, almost pure philosophy. But when you read theories by Jung, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we are hearing the same story over and over again.
Right.
There's just one archetype of a myth. It doesn't come from the outside. It's actually inside of you. You just see it in different forms all around you.
That wasn't too deep. I love that. Mythology, you can never go wrong because it's the basis for so many things. And in so many cultures, in philosophy and philosophers and poets and all that stuff, they're the basis of so many stories throughout history. And they were the first, to tell these stories.
Yes, it goes on for millions of years, I suppose. I mean, ever since a sentient human being, let's say, appeared in this world, I guess that's one of the first things they did, tell a story to each other.
I like you, man.
Thanks.
And I like your work, man. And I know me liking you has nothing to do with anything, but... And I appreciate your work. And it does seem like a very unique project on Kickstarter. And it's kind of cool that you've taken... I think if you do a book and you don't put many words in it, I think you do take a risk. Sometimes risk should be rewarded, you know?
Most of all, thanks for this opportunity. You know, to share and say a couple of words. Because still, I think people deserve at least a short explanation of our motivations.
Okay, for anyone out there, you like mythology, you like stories, everybody likes a well-told story. I think this video that proposes the book on Kickstarter tells a very good story, and the images are incredible. So I would say go to Kickstarter.com, type in Stories in Red, a graphic novel. If you can't find it there, go to DJGrandpa.com and we will provide links. Because we always like to tell stories and we like to hear stories. So if you have a story, let us know and we'll reach out to you possibly also. Tom, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Let me get a pronouncer on your name, man, so just so I have it all on tape so I can't screw that up.
It's Adib Shabazz.
Shabazz. Okay, all right, cool. We're here to talk about Hip Hop U, multimedia magazine on Kickstarter, and so how can I help you, man?
You know, I ask everybody to share the knowledge of what we're doing, to let everybody know what Hip Hop U Multimedia Magazine is about and what's behind it, what they can expect from it. Just educating people on what we're doing, and I think they'll understand the importance.
You're out of Atlanta, Georgia, too, right? No, Savannah.
I'm out of Savannah, Georgia.
Okay, cool. All right, now what's your vision, man? What do you want from this whole Kickstarter program? What do you want to happen?
We are looking to encompass the culture as it's been represented over the last 40 years, dating from August 11th, 1973 to present.
Right.
Starting from that party at 1520 Sedgwick Avenue in the Bronx that sparked everything off with DJ Kool Herc,
mm-hmm.
until this point. We're looking to connect people back to those roots, to the foundation that made hip-hop what it is. The foundation of, especially from that party, a fundraiser, for example, for Kool Herc's sister to get her some money for books. I mean, it was about education from the start. And it continued to be about education as one person was sparked, who later became known as Afrika Bambaataa,
right.
Also of the Bronx, who was at the time a gang leader for the Black Spades, and took it back to his gang and actually began to transform his gang from the Black Spades to the Universal Zulu Nation in 1973, and became very active in utilizing what he coined as hip-hop in 1974. Right. It was always an educational tool from the beginning, as we can see from that history. And you look at the people at the root, you have a lot of people from Zulu Nation, the original Jazzy Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
You have Lisa Lee, one of the first female rappers. Mm-hmm. You have some of the early pioneers of hip-hop, such as Kool Moe Dee.
But you got the Crash Crew, you got the Treacherous Three, right. You got Funky right. 4+1. Of course, nobody wants to give the Sugar Hill Gang it because they were from Jersey, you know, the record label. But
Jersey Crew. Got in the mix too. Yeah, we had Jersey in the mix. We had Lady B.
Had Lady
speaking
B.
of Funky yeah. 4+1 more, and Sha Rock, of course, being one of those first females in the game. But we had Lady B actually being the first female MC on Wax in 1979 out of Philadelphia. So even Philadelphia getting in the mix there from the beginning. But people were also, of course, having fun, entertaining. But there was always that educational element from Kool Moe Dee, that educational element from Melly Mel and Scorpio, the Furious Five with Grandmaster Flash. That educational element always lingered there, and it really got strong when people, and I know you and I can relate, being from youth at that time period, our parents saying, oh, that stuff ain't gonna last, that rap stuff ain't gonna last. And look at it now. It became multi-million and then multi-billion dollars in terms of its industry.
Right.
And it became very educational in the 80s. That educational aspect continued to grow as we, you know, got Melly Mel educating us on white lines. You had Eric B. and Rakim talking about a new culture of these five percenters that we began to learn about in hip hop. We have Boogie Down Productions, KRS-One, Public Enemy, you know, you name it. Four Righteous Teachers, Big Daddy Kane, I don't want to leave him out. But then people started to get wise at the top, so to speak, and began to say, well, look, we've got to throw something in the pot here to break this up. And gangster rap began to become funded. Then they realized, even out of the biggest gangster group, NWA, that there was actually education coming out of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were talking about it from the level of street knowledge. And that really didn't work in terms of actually stopping the educational flow. So some legislation, such as the Telecommunications Act of 1996, began to shift the gears by taking the radio situation to a new level, allowing large corporations to buy more than one station in a broadcast region, thus creating monopolies that didn't exist before and drowning out the independent stations that were able to choose what they played. So now we have this droning on playlist of the same old stuff over and over again. And it's very easy for them to choose what we listen to on the radio.
Well, some people say that's the worst law that Bill Clinton ever put into effect.
But what Hip Hop U looks to do is to really put today's hip hop generation back in contact with the roots that some of them vaguely know about, others don't know about at all. The teens and the 20-somethings are kind of lost when it comes to connecting with those roots. So we want to make that connection without actually being preachy. We want to make also a publication that will actually connect the late 30-somethings and 40-somethings and even 50-somethings that know hip-hop with the youth, so that we can actually have a culture that has its representation in youth, but also with advisement from the elders. Not the elders who want to preach and put them down for what they represent today, but to just guide them along in a direction that will help them retain what the culture is all about and actually grow it.
That brings me to certain questions, because you can't question the youth on their version of hip-hop or what hip-hop is today, because they say it's better than it's ever been. There's more mm-hmm. styles, there's more everything.
The ones who are happy with the state of what is called hip-hop are the younger generation that is unaware of the question to ask. I mean, when you can't identify what question you should ask because you're not educated to do so, then you don't ask that question. We're looking to put out some information in a way that is enticing to all the youth and the elders that will make them ask the question, hey, why not?
For anybody out there, I think you should check out Hip Hop U, Hip Hop University, Hip Hop Universal, Hip Hop Ultramagnetic, Multimedia Magazine. Check it out on Kickstarter. And if you can't find this project on Kickstarter, go to djgrandpa.com and we'll have the links, man, for Hip Hop U, Multimedia Magazine. And now, a shout-out to my man Nicholas of Superpowered Fiction. He's backed over 117 projects over the past 2 years on Kickstarter. And now he has his own called Lightweight, a serialized superhero graphic novel.
My name is Nicholas Allhelm. I'm a writer, a publisher, a lover of superheroes. Lightweight is a tale of a young superhero just starting out after he suddenly gains powers over gravity, and in the process will embroil him into a situation with two massive factions that have been secretly working throughout history in weird and odd ways.
Now, if you're interested in this graphic novel, head on over to Kickstarter and type in Lightweight. Or drop by DJ Grandpa's crib, where we'll have links for Nicholas. I'd like to thank all our guests. I'd also like to thank our listeners. Each week, we couldn't do it without you guys. A special thanks goes out to Trevor Williams and to my mentor, The Mumbler, for providing music to DJ Grandpa's crib. Thanks to Jeffrey Banks and Bertram Zeke, our assistant editors. Until next week, so say we all.
The homepage for DJ Grandpa's Crib is djgrandpa.com. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, DJ Grandpa's Crib, all one word. Please subscribe to our podcast in iTunes, which helps other people discover the show. And don't forget to leave a comment while you're there. Our producer is Von Rupert. The executive producer of this and all Bedrock Communications podcasts is A.F. Rufus. We'll be right back.